Welcome to the Crypto Witch Club podcast, a space for all to learn about blockchain tech. Join us as we demystify NFTs, report on crypto culture, and navigate Web3.
Hey, Crypto Witches. Today on the Crypto Witch Club podcast, we're discussing Web3 smartphones, what they are, how they work, and how Polygon and Solana are getting involved. We also have a Web3 witch on the run after majorly defrauding investors, and honestly, the FBI listing makes a lot of sense. We break it down. We'll also walk you through what it's like purchasing crypto off an exchange for the first time and the steps required to move it to a wallet. Want more? Our latest free NFT resource list is now live on our blog, and we have some amazing IRL events coming up next month that we are announcing soon. Stay tuned, witches. Welcome back, Crypto Witches.
Woo!
We have some super fun topics we're discussing tonight. There are some crazy things going on in the wonderful world of Web3 right now. So much bear market drama. And we have a pretty fun day today, actually. We're going to a boys club event, IRL tonight. So it's going to be our first boys club event that we attend in person.
I'm excited.
I'm super excited. We're going to be meeting up with Wallace from Holisticism. She's going to be our date. It's going to be so fun. But I know a lot of people have been reaching out about our sustainability blog post on Medium. And actually, I was talking with Andy Eaton. We're going to be on her Woo Woo Best Friend podcast next month. But we were basically talking about sustainability and so many misconceptions there are. And we kind of broke down like why proof of stake is more sustainable than proof of work. But I also found this really cool article that right now there's a farmer using cow poop to power his Bitcoin mining.
Cool.
And that is just as sustainable as you get. I mean, to be, instead of using it as like fertilizer, to actually use it for your mining is just genius. And it makes sense because, you know, you and I have talked before, Cambridge University actually has a Bitcoin consumption index. You can find it online. It's called the Cambridge Bitcoin Electricity Consumption Index. And it basically breaks down how Bitcoin's being powered. And, you know, did you know that over 70% of Bitcoin is actually, there's a blend of sustainable energy used in its mining mix.
Okay, cool.
So 70% of miners are using some form of sustainable energy in the mix.
Okay.
So that was really exciting. And I feel like, you know, that's a good path. If we could get every miner just to use a form of sustainable energy, I think it would help a lot in terms of what's working.
I like how they call it brown energy. Or maybe just this article is calling it that.
I love it. No, brown energy is so funny. You know, there's this new thing, you know, like white noise. There's this new thing called brown noise, and it just makes me think of shit. Like just the name brown noise, but it's like kind of this lower frequency. Tis wild. But I think that the question with energy, even if you look at a proof of work cryptocurrency that uses a lot of energy like Bitcoin, it really depends on if you think like the value there is if it depends. I think people who criticize the amount of energy usage totally understand it, but I think you're going to be more critical depending on how valuable you see it is or isn't, or you think it is or isn't.
Oh, for sure. I mean, if you don't understand it, you're going to be like, why? What a waste.
Totally. And there's this guy from Harvard Business Review, Nick Carter, and he has this great quote he wrote where he says, if you believe Bitcoin offers no utility beyond serving as a Ponzi scheme or device for money laundering, then it would only be logical to conclude that consuming any amount of energy is wasteful. But if you're one of the tens of millions of individuals worldwide using it as a tool to escape monetary repression, inflation, or capital controls, you most likely think this energy is extremely well spent. Whether you feel Bitcoin has a valid claim on society's resources boils down to how much value you think Bitcoin creates for society. Mm-hmm. Astute.
Yeah.
What do you think, though, about, like, the general population? Like, do you feel like the general, like, the average person who's, like, heard of Bitcoin but doesn't know much about crypto, I feel like they, it's not clear to the majority, like, that each cryptocurrency and blockchain uses a different type of energy or a different amount of energy.
Totally. I mean, I think some people can't even get past the thing of, like, that it's not tangible. You can't hold it in your hand.
I know. And, you know, there's a lot of things you can't hold in your hand, like your index funds.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's funny too, because, I mean, if you think about just digital money, like us using credit cards and stuff, mm-hmm. I wonder what that was like for early adopters. Did they have the same thing? Did they?
Totally. I mean, well, credit is just like made up. So,
oh my
I
God.
Wonder how long it took for credit. That's a good, we should look that up.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah. And credit scores are just total blasphemy. I cannot. But I actually saw, remember that yoga, the Web3 like yoga session we did during NFT NYC in Times Square? Mm-hmm. So I saw, it was sponsored by Outside.io. They were one of the partners. And I saw that for a blockchain like Solana, one transaction on the Solana blockchain uses less energy than 3 Google searches.
There you go.
Yeah. So next time you're looking for a place for dinner, you might be utilizing more energy that like when you're looking for a place on dinner on Yelp, you might be utilizing more energy than it takes for a cryptocurrency transaction.
Interesting.
I know. I wish this podcast had more Web2 listeners, because I feel like everybody like listening to this is like, yeah,
duh.
Like obviously, but I just think it should be put out there for the masses.
I wonder how much web energy Amazon Web Services uses.
Oh my God. I mean, that has to be insane.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you shop on Amazon.
I mean, a lot of the internet is on Amazon Web Services.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm actually really curious to know how much of the internet is on Amazon Web Services, but it has to be a lot. I love this cow poop mining. So the original story is from the BBC, and my family on my mom's side was like farmers. My great grandma, who just died at like 103 years old, lived by herself on a farm till her dying day and was totally independent. But essentially, this man, Philip Hughes, he had a family farm that was used for generations. And when it was passed down to him, he basically added a green shipping container to the farm and, you know, started doing cryptocurrency farming, quote unquote, BBC. But I just think, like, what a genius way to utilize your land. About 2/3 of the electricity generated by the digester helps power the farm and the farm's caravan park, but the remaining powers help mining rigs, specialist computers about the size of a suitcase. Right now they're mining Ethereum, because as we know, Ethereum is currently a proof of work. Wow. You go, Philip Hughes.
Cryptocurrencies. That's what this article says.
Cryptocurrencies. That's so funny. Oh my God, what a missed opportunity. I wish I thought of that. Should we talk about, you know, we love women in Web3, but not all women in Web3 are built equally. And, OneCoin's crypto queen is now on the FBI's most wanted list.
Wow. So many people have been texting me and they're like, is this you?
Stop. You know, that was one of the actual, I almost pulled crypto queen for instead of crypto witch club. That was one of the original names I pitched to Caitlin like a year and a half ago, and she shut it down so fast. I at the time did not know about this woman, but Caitlin was like, no girl, We're not naming ourselves that. And I love Crypto Witch Club so much better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do you know about this woman?
So essentially, like, she absolutely deserves to be on the FBI's most wanted list. She defrauded billions of dollars from investors around the world through a coin she created called OneCoin. So she was basically founder, launched OneCoin in 2016. OneCoin was launched in 2014, and they claimed as a mineable cryptocurrency with a max supply of 120 billion coins, which is a huge max supply. Let me just say that. Essentially, they schemed people by luring in investors promising to be the next Bitcoin. If you're a true blue crypto witch, you know that, you know, you can never have Bitcoin's value if you have a circulation of 120 billion. Bitcoin has 120 million-ish coins total. So, you know, supply and demand, baby. But essentially, she made some false statements. She frauded people. And she's been on the run for a hot minute. Yeah, so she's been on the run as almost as long as I've been in cryptocurrency, since 2017. So
it is you. It is us.
We're back.
Oh man.
Love seeing Web3 women in the news, but
I love her glamour shots.
They look very like you went to the mall and you remember those things in the mall where it's like 1 hour glam? That's what it gives me vibes of.
Where's she from?
She's a Bulgarian German convicted fraudster.
Wow.
She's very glamorous, though. I'll give her that. Oh, the BBC did a whole podcast series on her called The Missing Crypto Queen.
Oh, okay.
That would have been so dumb of me. Like, I was so, as much as I knew about blockchain and cryptocurrency when we launched Crypto Witch Club at Web3, I was so out of the social scene in the space. Yeah. I'm so glad we didn't launch with Crypto Queen.
Yeah.
I had no idea, but you know.
Someone would have stopped us, maybe.
Someone, eventually. But I feel it feels really nice. I feel like we're kind of like, now that I'm getting over like my shyness, we're kind of like getting out there more, and it's so nice to be tuned into the social. And there's so many more, like there's so many better communities and stronger Twitter spaces and Twitter accounts versus, you know, when I started in 2017, it was so bleak.
So bleak. Now it's like, even my mom forwarded me her like weekly newsletter that she gets, and they have something about NFTs in there too.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's spreading out. More generations, and that brings me to that company that you like called Nothing. I don't like it. Oh, I don't like the name, because I don't think the boomers will get it, and I think it might just be hard for, like, I can't imagine trying to explain,
you're like, why,
to an investor that I named my company Nothing. I don't know.
I think it made me more interested. Like, I have the worst memory. I will never forget this company's name, because it's just so, like, when I was reading the article, I was like, what? Like, so wild. But I agree. Like, do we need to add complexity to an already complex space? Probably not.
Yeah.
But will we? Like, yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, so tech startup Nothing has tapped the Polygon network to offer NFTs on its new phone. So I think that's interesting, because like one way that tech companies are trying to get this easier for people to use is by actually making devices with this functionality on it.
Yeah, I mean, think about when Apple gets to this, which, you know, won't be now, but in a couple years probably. I think there'll be such a turning point, because these are smaller providers, but now we have this past 2 weeks, we've announced Solana, that is partnering for a Web3 integration phone. And what it means to make a phone kind of Web3 is they're going to be offering services like Seed Vault. So you can actually keep your seed phrases safe on your phone, which is genius. A wallet adapter, some type of custody solution. You can do Solana Pay, like Apple Pay. So super easy. And it's going to have a decentralized app store, a dApp store, which is going to allow developers to create mobile apps on Solana the same way developers create these centralized mobile apps for Android or Apple. Mm-hmm. So I'm super excited, and I think really interested to see what's going to shake down, because Polygon and Solana doing it at the same time. I'm kind of like, But it seems like Solana's plans are more in depth and the Polygon is more NFT focused.
And Polygon runs on ETH.
Yeah, so Polygon essentially acts as a layer to ETH.
Okay.
So Polygon is its own blockchain.
Oh.
It doesn't run on the ETH blockchain like a token.
Oh, okay.
It's its own blockchain, and that blockchain runs on top of ETH. It's kind of like, it's like a little extension, like an add-on. So it's able to access all the ETH features that are great, but it, because it's not proof of work, it's able to speed up the transactions, and it's able to reduce the cost of transactions. But it is essentially like piggybacking off Ethereum.
Got it.
Yeah, okay. But it's not a token. It has its own blockchain, which is cool. I think, you know, there's been talks in the space where it's like, well, what happens when Ethereum updates to Ethereum 2.0? Because, like, will that make Polygon obsolete? Because, you know, Polygon, if when ETH upgrades, it's going to change to proof of stake, which is going to do the same thing Polygon's doing. It's going to decrease transaction costs, and it's going to increase and quicken transactions. So, you know, only time will tell.
I don't know. I'm just like imagining these, you know, these new smartphones that have, you know, wallets on them being sent to teens around the world.
Totally. It's going to be under your Christmas tree.
Yeah.
In a couple of years. And I think our phones are so part of us. Even if you're somebody who is really good with like low phone time, you're not somebody who's like super on social media, maybe even. Like, you still use your phone for a lot, like to pay for things or, you know, to swipe into the subway if you're a New Yorker, and your Apple Pay. So, I mean, I think this is really going to be when like the two worlds merge. It really reminds me of like in the 90s and like early 2000s, like you couldn't buy a box of Chex Mix without the AOL CD inside.
Right.
And I think this might be the AOL CD.
Like, you can't buy a new phone that doesn't already have like a crypto wallet installed on it.
Exactly.
Yeah, probably.
And our phones are just such an extension of ourselves. I mean, you're going to have these accesses on your phone. And once you see other people benefit from them, you're going to realize how easy it is. It's going to be right there, like just staring you in the face. Like,
do you think the phone wallet will act like a ledger? Like a soft wallet, or will it be connected to the internet? Will it have both functionality, maybe?
So a ledger is a hardware wallet.
Yeah.
Which,
so this phone is hardware.
Yeah. I wonder, I think it would be a hardware, like a ledger.
You could probably have both. A hardware wallet on your phone and...
Right.
So your normal MetaMask or whatever.
Exactly. So like right now we both have our MetaMasks on our phone and our VeChain Thor wallets. We'll probably also have a hardware wallet that's disconnected from the internet that lives on our phone. That's such a good point.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Why haven't they done that yet? Is that, that's what this...
Yeah, this is 2022. Why is this only happening now? Come on. I cannot wait, though. I mean, am I going to trade in my iPhone for, like, a small Android device since, like, not big in the U.S.? Like, no, I am not. But do I think this is going to be a huge change for people in other countries that are using this phone? And to making it like palatable and acceptable for bigger companies to do so. Like, yeah, I think it's going to be huge.
Well, maybe you'll have a phone that's your wallet that you just keep at home and you're safe.
No, I would just have a ledger then, I think. Because it's like, why would I want the full phone? Yeah, why would it be a phone? It would just be a ledger. But, I mean, yeah. I was trying to think. I really think, like, when Samsung, Apple, like those brands come up, that's when it's going to be the full, because they have market share. You need like the market share phone users to do it. But yeah, we need to do like a Ledger unboxing. I've been wanting that pink Ledger Nano S.
Get it.
Or maybe like that orange, like creamsicle color.
Get it. Let's make it real.
And we'll do an unboxing. And then we definitely have to do a brand reel today or tomorrow.
Okay.
Of how you did the Crypto Witch brand design.
Oh,
I've
never
seen somebody design something so flawless, so fast. And it was great too, because we went in being like, we're going to be really adaptable with the branding. We're going in, we're testing this. You know, it was the third idea I asked Caitlin to like design on. But, and it was great just from the start. And you know what? And the things we need to change, we changed. And our community told us what they wanted and we shifted. And I think it'll just be such a fun reel watching, like showing how your branding came to life for Crypto Witch Club. Okay, next item on the docket. We're going to talk about how to purchase crypto from an exchange and move it to a wallet. Huge.
Okay.
Do you remember the first time you bought crypto?
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel when you like were first getting on the exchange?
I was nervous because they were asking me for like my social security and my bank info.
And they're like, who are you? Like, yeah, why do you need this?
That made me a little nervous. And like thinking like, where does this money go? Who's benefiting from my investment on that side, you know? Because it, for me, it's like, I think about it like stocks, like in the company you're investing in. So,
and also I think like cryptocurrency is so international, like the market's 24/7, every project, like some projects are like have full remote workforces. So their workforce is spread all over the world. So it's kind of, when you first dig in, I think it's definitely hard to be like, where's my money actually going to? Like, what's going to Coinbase? What's going to this project? Who's doing this project? What's it being used for? Is it not being, like, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot. And I think also an important thing to remember for everybody listening is, when you first get on, if you're US-based and you're purchasing cryptocurrency on a centralized exchange, it's going to ask you the exact same questions a bank's going to ask you, because just like your savings account, what you, your realized gains, which you pull out, or I guess that's different than a savings account. Just like regular banking, Coinbase or Gemini, whatever the centralized exchange you're using is, they do report to the IRS. So, you know, they're going to want to confirm you're a real person. You're going to have your social security number put in. It's the exact same process as if you were signing up for a savings account or for a stock brokerage account.
Yeah.
So whatever centralized exchange you're on, you want to make sure you trust it. There haven't been any data breaches in the short-term future. And also, it's important to look at if the exchange is insured. Some exchanges, it's not FDIC insured, but it's privately insured. So the major exchanges will have your funds privately insured up to a certain amount, usually, especially for stable coins. So that's a good thing to look at if you're deciding between exchanges. So, okay.
So how do you move it to a wallet? That's the next step, right?
So the number one thing is when you, the first thing you're going to want to do, and this is, let's say, where we want to buy cryptocurrency for the first time and we know it's bad to leave it on an exchange. We know our cryptocurrency is safest in our wallet. So this is how you purchase and then move cryptocurrency to a wallet. And I'm going to break it down in just a few steps because it's a lot easier than it may seem if you see on Twitter and Instagram and you're looking at trading charts and it seems so complex. It's not. So when you're first looking to purchase cryptocurrency, whether you're looking to purchase cryptocurrency to buy an NFT or if you're looking to purchase it to stake on a DeFi exchange, join a liquidity pool, or just move it to your wallet, you are going to either open up your computer or go to your phone. Most exchanges are accessible by both, if not all exchanges. Just use your preference. And if you're using your phone, you'll want to download the exchange from the App Store. So for this example, we'll use Coinbase. I'm going to go to my store. I'm going to download the free Coinbase app. Once it opens up, it's going to have basic registration info, similar to if you were signing up for a bank account. So it's going to ask you your name, your address, your social security number. You'll have to upload a copy of your passport or driver's license or other state ID to prove you are a real living, breathing person. And then from there, you'll have access to Coinbase. There are times it can take 24 to 48 hours for your documentations to clear before you can deposit money or send it in and out. But just take that time to set up your bank account, connect your bank account or your debit card to your Coinbase account so you're ready for that first transaction. If you don't know what cryptocurrency you're purchasing yet, this is a great time to learn. Every exchange has, or most major exchanges have a lot of good educational material on there for the coins they cover. Once you know your coin, you're going to select it. You're going to select how much a USD you're going to purchase or how much units of that cryptocurrency you're going to purchase. Pop it in. It'll show you a conversion and then confirm the purchase. So it's pretty simple. It's kind of like making a bank transfer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think in this scenario, we'll talk about NFTs another time and what it looks like, that process to buy an NFT. But in this scenario, you're going to want to download a software wallet or purchase a hardware wallet because you don't want your cryptocurrency sitting on the exchange. That lives on an exchange is not truly owned by you. It's, you know, owned by, or it's in custody of that exchange. It's owned by that exchange. So you're going to want to download a compatible wallet. Coinbase actually does have its own software wallet. And then if you're doing Ethereum or a token that runs on the Ethereum blockchain, you can get MetaMask, which is another good software wallet we both use. And you're going to see two different wallet addresses. So if you open up your Coinbase app in this situation or your exchange app, there's going to be a QR code or a long numerical code to send money, or excuse me, to receive money to that exchange. And then if you go to your wallet, there's also going to be a numerical code and or a QR code to receive money there. So we're going to want to send it from your exchange wallet address, the numerical code, to your actual wallet address. And to do so, what you're going to do is you're going to open up your app. You're going to go to send.
Which app?
Well, in this case, we'll use Coinbase app as an example. So you'll go to your exchange app.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying the app. You'll go to your exchange app. You will enter the wallet that address, which is that long numerical number string. Enter your wallet address into the Coinbase app saying you want to send your money there. Press yes, accept the fees, and confirm. The fees for sending money are pretty minimal. It depends on the coin. It depends on what platform you're using. So essentially, what you're all you need to send funds from your exchange to any wallet is the wallet address of the wallet that's receiving it. So
and
just
the long numerical code. You can share that with people because that's like your send me money address.
Yes, that is your Venmo request. That is when somebody wants to send something to you, that's the address you give them. You never give them your private seed phrase.
Got it.
It's also the address you'll use for things like airdrops. And that's why it's so important to have a wallet. Like if you are part of a, if you want to purchase an NFT, for example, you have to hold a wallet to purchase the NFT. Mm-hmm. And if you want to receive things like airdrops and rewards from your like favorite creators and mm-hmm. artists, you'll need that wallet address to sign up. You'll also, your wallet address can also be used as essentially like proof of ownership. So if you're going to a party where maybe it only has certain NFT holders are allowed admittance, you're going to be showing that because that's your NFTs tied to your wallet address.
And you have to have a different wallet for each blockchain.
Yeah, some wallets can hold multiple okay. ones, but not all wallets.
Okay.
So for example, Coinbase can hold multiple.
Okay.
That's a software wallet that can hold multiple. Well, MetaMask can only hold ERC-20 tokens, and which are Ethereum-based. And, you know.
And Ethereum. Okay.
Anything Ethereum-based related okay. can be held there. And then you can also do native wallets. So, for example, I own a lot of VeChain. So I have my own VeChain 4 wallet because it makes sense for me to have it in its own wallet. And I get rewards on it there as well.
Yes.
Dividends.
And you have to pay taxes on those.
And you have to pay taxes on your dividends. We're going to do like the most intense tax prep series for real. We're going to start it like over the holidays. Or like maybe it's the holidays of the holidays in like January. All quarter, we do like tax. Like that's what our Twitter spaces turns into. Yes.
I'm just showing her my VeChain Thor wallet.
I sent Caitlin like $50 worth of VeChain as like part of her birthday present. And it's like
$7.
$7 now. But you know what? It's good. She's still in it. And the great thing, this is why I don't want to say I love the bear market. I have my moments. But this is one of the perks of a bear market is because we're earning dividends and we get VTHOR from our VeChain holdings, we actually get more units because it's a lower price.
Got it.
Yeah.
So when this goes back up to $50, I'll have more rewards because.
Exactly. Yeah. So even when it hits the same amount, mm-hmm. those rewards will add more. I feel actually pretty good about this bear market though. Like in my personal opinion, and I'm not a charts girl, so this is completely my fantasy, you know, this is not data driven. I really don't think the crypto market it's going to be as bad as people think, the bear market. Like some people are saying Bitcoin can go as low as 12K. Do I believe them? Totally. It absolutely could go as low as 12K. I bought Bitcoin during the last bear market when it was 4,500. So that seems like appropriate, like it could drop that far. But I do think that adoption has increased so much since that bear market in 2018. And I kind of feel like we're going to see less digital bloodshed.
And like, the more adoption you see, the less volatile it gets, right?
Exactly.
And so it'll go up higher now the next time it goes up because there's more people in it, right?
Absolutely. Like I was My husband asked what our crypto balance was the other day, and I literally was like, oh God, I've been waiting for him to ask that. So I told him, and I think he was like bummed, but at the same time, I think it's so great to go off your lowest lows versus your highest highs. Because of course it's super depressing. I'm trying to get him amped. You know, he's definitely a Web3 guy. He's super, he believes in the tech. You know, he gives me all his money to invest in it. But you know, it's jarring when you see your portfolio go down to like 20% of what it was.
Yeah. It's a good time to invest, right? It's a good time to put some money in and just sit on it for a year or two and see what happens. It's a good time to learn.
Absolutely. And I think also like it's depressing if you see how my peak portfolio was.
Yeah.
Like I was rich. I felt super good. I was looking at my bougie houses and then it dropped. But at the same time, I'm still in profit above what I put in.
Yeah.
Like if you break down my profits, I'm still up like 80% a year, even with this huge bear market. So I think it makes a lot more sense to look at the amount I invested and what was the actual return on that, quote unquote, at the lowest. And in that case, I did really good. You know, still up. And if this is your first bear market, you will likely not still be up. I am only still up in profits because I'm a long-term investor and this is my second bear market. And I use the last bear market really as a buying opportunity. And I'm going to go into this next bull market with a lot more money than I went into the last bull market with. I will say if there's a lesson I learned, it's don't be greedy and do pull out some profits at the top.
Yeah.
We had a friend then said, he told me, like, you'll never regret pulling off 10%. And I wish I had pulled 10% off at the top of the bull run.
Yeah.
But that's a lesson you got to learn for yourself.
When was the last bear market?
2018.
Okay. So when I got in at 2019, it was like just going up.
Yeah. I think you got in when Ethereum was like around 250, like 300, if I remember. And at its lowest, it was in the 90s. So you bought at such a good time.
Cool.
Yeah. Versus our friend Jason, who follows us in Crypto Witch Club and is the biggest crypto witch. And he's like, I'm learning everything about crypto from you girls. Like, do it.
Yeah.
And, but he invested a lot in the bull market. And I'm sorry, Jason, but he's such a trooper. Like, he's an investor. He knows.
Yeah.
Then it goes up and he's not pulling anything out.
Right.
He's like, whatever I put in there, I fully expected to lose, like worst case scenario. So that's the mentality to have.
Yeah. It's just early days. Nothing's guaranteed yet.
Yeah. And I think if I love to compare it to the start of the internet and, you know, there's going to be the Googles and the Amazons and the Apples. But there's also going to be the Ask Jeeves and the Netscapes and the really promising projects and fail, Terra Luna. and that's okay. Just diversify and be well-informed and do your best. We're definitely going to do a reel about getting on a crypto exchange for the first time and purchasing cryptocurrency and sending it to a wallet. We're definitely going to do a reel of the journey from wallet to NFT. So those will be coming up.
Cool.
And the NFT purchase. Oh my, one more thing I'm really excited to talk to you about. You know Wawa.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, do you want to explain it? Because you're like a Wawa newbie.
It's kind of like a 7-Eleven, but it's like a convenience store, but it has yummy food. I mean, not yummy. It's like Subway and Panera mixed together, kind of.
Yeah, it's exceptional. They have like the best hoagies. It's Hoagie Fest. That's what they do all summer. It's like they're $5 hoagies. All the sandwiches are made fresh. And then when they have snacks, instead of having like a taquito or whatever, whatever that 7-Eleven has, like the hot dogs and the little taquito sticks. They have literally like fruit and cheese and nut mixes and like all the best little charcuterie things.
And soups and stuff
and,
too.
Yeah, meatball subs and like, oh, and they have an icy machine, which has been my go-to. Anyway, so I was at Wawa when I was driving back with my husband from upstate, because you have to hit the Wawa and like swing through New Jersey. And turns out they've created their own NFTs.
Oh my God.
For Hoagie Fest. So 40,000 people have.
What does it look like? Are you going to get one?
Okay, I'm definitely entering to win a Wawa NFT. Like, I'm so excited. So they're essentially like these characters that like love subs. But like, it's so funny because there's this crazy backlash because people are so mad that Wawa's making NFTs.
What?
People are like, my night is ruined. I cry every day and every hour. Wawa, how could you? I've never been so betrayed. I mean, come on. One person, I'm reading the Philadelphia Inquirer. One person even lobbed the line on Twitter, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Well, let's do a post like saying we love Wawa.
I mean, I am literally, I'm going to reach out to them and see if they need a partner.
Fuck yeah. I'm looking at it right now. I'm definitely going to enter.
Like, I mean, why are people so angry at Wawa for NFTs?
I know people just like to post angry news these days. No one wants to post, oh my God, I love Wawa.
Like, I mean, yeah, that's why I love the Caitlin content. Like, Caitlin sends me all, like, horses and gardening. And bread.
Good news stories.
Carbs only.
No one wants, no one, yeah, this is the Philadelphia Choir. They want to report on.
This person's like.
Drama goss.
Why is a gas station promoting something environmentally harmful for profit?
Oh, what did Wawa say that?
Well, they didn't say anything. It was a response to that. I wish they would have responded.
Reach out. They need a response team.
Hey, I love Wawa for. Oh, hey, I love Wawa for a long time, years. But if you guys start doing NFTs, you can bet I will tell everyone I know in New Jersey to stop going. NFTs are destroying the planet. I've been used for money laundering. I've gotten thousands of artists of work stolen. Do better, Wawa.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think this is why this
just shows how
unknown the space is. Totally. Yeah. I love how I'm trying not to say uneducated.
I almost just said that too.
I'm like, it's unknown. But like, I think we have to just do more. We have to do more environmental breakdowns.
Yeah.
Break it down. It's not like breakdowns.
Yeah. Well, can you respond to a couple of these people on Twitter just to, you know?
I wonder if it's worthwhile though. You know how I don't like doing the tweet.
I know. Yeah.
The tweet things.
But, like, maybe you can just respond and be like, hey, Wawa, we'll help you with some NFT education if you need it. Or reach out however you want. But
yeah, let's figure it out.
Because I agree. I love Wawa. And this is a hilarious thing.
They actually had a good response.
Oh, okay.
So they said, I'm just on a Twitter recap, and they said, well, we don't expect everyone to be intrigued by the world of NFTs. We're excited to see so much excitement with so many entries received in just the first few days. And the company is also stressing the Wawa is not selling NFTs, nor is it receiving profit, but their charitable partners could benefit from any future sales because owners may, even though they're giving these for free as a giveaway, if they're sold on the secondary market, a portion of those royalties would go back to Wawa. So Wawa's saying any royalties that could come after they've given away these will go to their charitable partners.
Who are their charitable partners?
I do not know.
Cool.
And then some people will get shirts, swag packs, and stuff. There's one animated one. I mean, yeah. Literally, they're just using NFTs to – it's kind of like just entering a sweepstakes.
Yeah, they're just trying to create a little buzz. I think it's great.
Get a little buzz in. You know who actually might be the best person to speak to about this is the editor who wrote this for the Philadelphia Inquirer, Stephanie Farr.
Okay.
She fights for Philly's honor against all its haters. It's what it says in its bio, which is the most Philly thing I've ever heard. But maybe I write to her and be like, hey, you know, we saw this upheaval about Wawa. Doing NFTs as a fellow, as Wawa enthusiast, like, can we kind of break it down for your readers?
Yeah.
Like, and I think it's interesting, the person who said, there was one person on Twitter then said, NFTs are bad because, or they were denouncing Wawa's NFTs, and they're saying NFTs are bad because artists get their work stolen. And well, that could absolutely happen.
It happens everywhere.
It happens everywhere. What NFTs are able to do for creators, whether you're an artist, a musician, or a content creator, or a videographer, or any, what they're able to do for creators is so much more powerful than how they can hurt creators. Like, never before have you been able to have digital ownership as a creator or get lifetime royalties. So to shade an artist for using NFTs and getting digital royalties, you know, I mean, I guess go ahead, but what's the point?
Yeah.
And I think also, like, Wawa probably, like, if PR Shireen went into this release, I would have definitely changed the part about the charitable. Like, oh, if we do receive any money from secondhand sales, we'll go to our charitable partners. Because seeing what happened with Girls Who Code, nobody cares. There's a lot of...
Oh, like, because if they don't like NFTs, they're not going to care that the money goes to charity anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to come up with some more environmental posts. This is kind of becoming a bummer. So, but I'm going to enter to win a Wawa NFT. I think Caitlin's on her computer right now doing that. So, you know, I think we'll make a reel about it and we'll share more later.
Yay.
Awesome.
Keep learning, witches.
Keep learning. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Crypto Witch Club podcast. Subscribe and follow us online at Crypto Witch Club.